You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Beethoven music that you crave. I am your host, Mark Shea, and we're here on this fine Thursday afternoon, as we're here every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And it being Thursday, we are here with my good friend, Mr. Doug O'Brien.
Hello, Mark.
Speaking to us from Chicago, where, golly, must be so excited.
It is.
Go Cubs.
Go Cubbies.
So, you know, I am such a huge Cubs fan that I have no idea who won last night.
The Cubs did. 5-1.
Did they? Really? 5-1?
We've evened up the series one game, game apiece.
Oh, that's such good news. You know, my son wrote this whole magnificent opus, which I should really read to you because he's such a snappy writer and he's so fun.
Where's he from?
I don't know. Thanks. But he wrote this thing the other day, which I think that you'll deeply appreciate. So here it is. He says, everything happening right now in the world of baseball reminded me of a story from my childhood. When I was very small, I had a baseball cap that I loved. I don't know where I got it. It had a little smiling face on it, which seemed like a pretty good fashion statement. That little smiling guy was actually the mascot for the Cleveland Indians baseball team, now widely considered to be super duper racist. But at the time, I wasn't aware of the concept of racism, America's history of genocide, what baseball was exactly, or what the word Cleveland meant, for that matter. But I did like smiling, so the hat seemed like a good choice. I wore my Cleveland Indians hat all the time. It smiled, I smiled, I made other people smile. We were the perfect team. It is important to note that I was an adorable child with a perfectly round head. It would have made you smile. One time, we went to the zoo with my cousins. This would be the Tacoma Zoo. The zoo is a perfect place to wear a smiley Cleveland Indians hat because every place was. It was lovely wandering around in my hat, looking at all the animals without fear of sunshine blinding me before we got to all the cool ones. Plus, I bet that all the animals felt more like smiling after seeing my hat. If need be, I would remove it from time to time to press my small, pale, perfectly round face up to the glass of some exhibit or tank. At one point, we were walking between exhibits, and I realized with dismay that I had left my Cleveland Indians hat behind at the beluga whale tank. Thinking on my feet and not wanting to cause any trouble, I snuck away from our family group with my cousin, who was also a small child like myself, so a natural ally and valuable resource. We went back to the beluga whale tank, and I found my hat right where I left it, on the rocks next to the tank. It had some beluga splashes on it, but none the worse for wear. Then we just headed back to outside, someplace. Where was the family when we left again? I think they were on one of the bigger paths, but maybe a smaller path. We wandered around the zoo for what felt like weeks and was probably more like 13 minutes. But after those 13 minutes, actually it was more like 45 minutes, so his aunt was having kittens. We were basically at the end of our rope and were planning on becoming zoo orphans. Had a pretty sharp idea of going back out to the van to wait for our family there. But this is the sort of thing that you don't hear for 20 years as a parent, and then you think, yikes. My cousin had a pretty sharp idea of going back out to the van to wait for our family there. But just before we exited the zoo and got lost in the actual city, I remembered a valuable lesson I had recently learned from a straight-to-VHS Winnie the Pooh video I had seen. If you get lost, you should talk to a grown-up. It all worked out. We talked to a lady in the ticket booth. They found our family, and my cousin, myself, and my Cleveland Indians hat made it back to civilization unscathed, though perhaps with our smiles slightly diminished. Since the Cleveland Indians made it to the World Series this year, I thought that after all we had been through together and how much that hat meant to me as a child, I should state openly. After marrying and having several children with a passionate and beautiful Chicagoan, the memory of that hat means nothing to me now. The Cleveland Indians are a garbage team for garbage people. Go Cubs.
Yes, go Cubs. Go Cubs, go.
I love that so much. So go Cubs. I'm rooting for the Cubs because I am now related through Matthew to Claire, who is, by the way, of course, one of the famous denizens of Marytown, where
that's right,
you have been a habitué. And so I'm really happy to hear that. About, gosh, 20 years ago now, there was one of the World Series was between the Yankees and I think it was Atlanta. And the Yankees were down by 3. And I had a friend who was just like, gloaty. He was rooting for the Yankees. And so just really just to be ornery, I really had no. No, it was the other way around. It was the Yankees that were down by 3. And he was a Braves fan. And so just to be ornery, I wrote, he lived in L.A. We'd never actually met. We just corresponded on the Internet. So I figured I'll never meet this guy. So it doesn't even matter. So I just like just defiantly said, you know, the Yankees are going to come roaring back and defeat the Braves, and you're going to be humiliated and virtual triumph and all the rest of it. And so he said, yeah, right. You know, I said, no, it's going to happen. What do you want to bet? So we wound up, I bet him, he bet me just horrible burger from some awful burger joint in LA. And I bet him like a chocolate fudge Baskin Robbins milkshake. If the Yankees came back. And sure enough, the Yankees came back and triumphed over the Braves 4-7 and won the World Series. Or 4-3 and won the World Series. And he was like, I can't believe this. And then I wound up getting an invitation to go to New Zealand. And my flight connected, guess where? So I said, I'm coming to LA. Where's my burger? And, and so sure, this is before 9/11 when you could just show up at the airport and meet your friends in there at the gate. So sure enough, he showed up at LAX with this just awful, awful hamburger from someplace and paid his debt. And so hats off to Liu Xiang for his amazing generosity. So are you going to any of the World Series games, or are you just going to watch on the tube?
Watch on the tube. I can't afford that. That's insane. Unless you're a season ticket holder. But, you know, you got to remember, this is the first World Series. Yes, last night's win is the first Cubs World Series win since 1945.
<You know>. So, yes.
And it's been more than a century since they've actually won the World Series. But actually, Mark, I'll tell you what. You got to hold on 1 second. Go ahead without me, okay?
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, then. The story of the World Series, I think, and of the Cubbies in the World Series, is the story of the Magnificat. He has cast down
Repair guy just came in.
Oh, that's okay. I was giving a little homily here on how the Cubbies illustrate the truth and beauty of the Magnificat. He has cast down the mighty in their arrogance and lifted up the lowly. You know, and we in Seattle know something of these experiences as well, of course, because it was just a few short years ago that God in his grace and mercy, stooped down and raised up the Seahawks to the Super Bowl and our crushing, dominating victory, in which we, of course, drank the tears of our enemies. it afforded me the opportunity to write a really, really fun gloat, which is, that's what football's all about. You know, baseball is the gentlemanly sport, but football is the game of mechanistic military conquest, you know. And so it's where you get to, you know, hold the severed heads of your victims aloft and utter your barbaric yawps and stuff.
That's
so
fun. That's what makes it fun.
That's what makes it fun. So anyway, well, so congratulations. I'm so happy to hear that. I should really I just didn't get to it last night. I was too busy with other things. But
I actually think this is just a further sign. Some Catholics here in the Chicago Archdiocese have been sharing messages back and forth, and I think we're all kind of agreeing this may be a sign, one of the signs of the apocalypse. Donald Trump is running for president, and the Cubs are in the World Series. So,
yeah,
so buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride.
So, well, I'm so happy to hear this. You know, that just, it makes me glad. I saw they got shut out the first night, and I thought, oh man,
yeah,
you know, all this struggle, but 5-1, that's a respectable victory. So, you know, the first game they were just kind of clearing their throat,
right?
Stretching their legs, ready. All right, well, we are here with the Doug O'Brien today, and we'll be back on Connecting the Dots on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien, Chicago resident, proud banner waver for the Chicago Cubs.
Go Cubs!
And, yes, go Cubs! And we are we're talking about life, the universe, and everything today. I have been tied up all morning working on a project. That's so secret, I must not speak of it. I've said too much already. They're probably the sound of my assassins battering outside the window now. But because I've been tied up all morning, I've been like oblivious to as indicated by my unawareness of who won the game last night. I haven't been paying any attention to the news today. It looks like there's been another WikiLeaks dump. Once again, making clear the not at all shady character of Hillary Clinton, who is certainly, definitely always on the up and up about everything.
Yeah.
Gosh. So what's going on there? I haven't been paying attention. What's the latest?
Well, the most recent dump talks about the blurred lines between the Clinton Foundation, the State Department, and fundraising for Bill Clinton by Doug Bank, who is both a staff person to Bill Clinton on his I'm a retired president, I get a staff position. As well as working for being a co-founder of a consulting firm that was doing work for the Clinton Family Foundation, and then by extension, the Clinton Global Initiative. And he does in this, in a series of emails that were released, explain all the accomplishments he's had, including millions of dollars, some $60 million in commitments made for Bill Clinton over the course of 9 years, for paid speeches, in which they work with corporate entities, essentially working with them to get Bill Clinton to give a speech, and then pushing them then to make a donation to the foundation, and then further having access then to the Secretary of State or the State Department. Now, none of this is direct connect the dots, and the pundits this morning and in the press will say there is no direct quid pro quo, but it's very clear that there's quid pro quo, even if it's not stated explicitly. Anyway, so the problem is that much of the morning news cycle was taken up by certainly Morning Joe was, this was the big subject of conversation. And what's funny is that the typical Democratic partisans, of which, you know, it is my party, right, and I've worked on campaigns at length in that party, I was surprised even by the lack of energetic defense. I think everyone is simply fatigued, right?
Exhausted. I was going to say, you just kind of get exhausted. Well, you know, it's, for me, it is, it's like there's just, so it's like a blizzard. Mm-hmm. You know, you just, I don't know how to process this information. And part, you know, and what's frustrating for me is it's the boy who cries wolf syndrome. When all Hillary has to do is blink and clear her throat for there to be screams of outrage that she's going to arrest all the Christians and have them sterilized, or
right,
or, you know, I mean, it's just everything that she says and does is like ramped up, dialed up to 11 as just the worst always. It becomes impossible to tell for me when she's actually doing something wrong, right? Because everything is wrong all the time. It's always an indication of mass people. And so it's like, it becomes difficult to tell if the story that I'm reading is actually contains real information, because a lot of times people just make stuff up. You know?
Right. I have to say that in this case, I mean, I need to...
That's why I need you. You know, yeah, well, I can't tell. I don't know what's real information anymore. It gets right. Really, really difficult.
Well, I would just say this. Well, I need to put my bona fides on the table.
Okay.
I am past president of College Democrats at my campus. I was on the National Board of College Democrats of America. I have worked on 3 different Democratic presidential campaigns, not as a volunteer, but as a staff person. Worked on Senate, House races, and worked on Capitol Hill working for iconic Democrats, one of which is still in the United States Senate and leader of the Democratic Party. So right. As far as me being a Democrat, there can be no doubt.
Right.
With that said, my issue with Hillary Clinton is not some ridiculous fear that she's going to round up Christians, put us in refugee camps, and have us sterilized.
Right.
Because I hear that too. You hear the rhetoric from people who are simply insane in their criticisms of her, which is unfortunate because then it actually undermines the real legitimate criticisms that people have, right?
It's and the boy who cried.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
yeah,
you know, there really is smoke. I believe there really is fire. Now,
I do too.
The reality is this, the FBI and DOJ and other, she has been, you know, special prosecutors back in the day, is that they have successfully not been prosecuted. The closest that Bill Clinton ever got was impeachment in the Senate. But beyond that, they have, you know, there's a lot of smoke, but really as far as fire or evidentiary proof showing that they are actually corrupt hasn't really emerged. And so, but we're stuck though with this kind of Clinton scandal fatigue. And and we have not had in the past is, you know, emails that show the inner workings. And I'll say again, as a former campaign rat, there is some interest I have in the back and forth between the campaign people. I know at least one, you know, one of the, John Podesta is someone who was an acquaintance who I've known and worked with in the past. And so I'm fascinated to have the insights from his email, you know, from his leaked emails. But the bigger, broader issue here is that there is this just ongoing, whether it be further proof that yes, the DNC colluded with can you hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry. No,
it's
fine.
It's all right.
It's that's the repairman, guys. Is it whether the DNC colluded in with the Clinton campaign in an effort to shut down Bernie Sanders or simply not give it or not be as objective as they're supposed to be or non-preferential? Or just, you know, I think this is unseemly in the sense that this is really about the Clintons enriching themselves on the backs of influence peddling with corporate America, which again, you know, Goldman Sachs and on, or using their high office then to enrich themselves. Yeah. So I think that's the sleaze factor.
Right. In the 19th century, it was called graft.
Right.
Yeah, and it just, you know, there's going to be another investment. I mean, the scenario that I'm more or less envisioning is she wins on November 8th, and then Congress goes to work on November 9th, starting to draw up impeachment proceedings, which will begin on January 21st.
and Mark, and here's the thing that we as Christians to be really concerned about is that the divisions, and this is, you know, a debate I think that's happening by a lot of people in the media and elsewhere, is that you know, the 40 some odd percent of people that are backing Donald Trump, and I think you're absolutely right, you know, she wins November 8th. I think I thought a week ago or 10 days ago that it would be something close to a 50 state sweep. I no longer believe that. I do not believe Texas is a play. I don't care what Nate Silver or anyone else says. Yeah. Texas is solidly Republican.
I think
Trump wins Arizona. I think he wins Iowa. I think he wins Ohio and North Carolina. And possibly even Florida. Or at least is very close in those. And that's the problem, is that on November 9th, you will still have 40% of the electorate that is unhappy and believes that she should not be in the Oval Office, right?
Right.
And my concern is that on November 13th, we will go to sit in our pews and people will still be seething about this.
Sure.
Right. And the fissures that this election has shown is cracks within the unity of the church, unity among Christians, among neighbors. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. And I don't see this actually resolving itself.
No, I don't either. And frankly, I think that Trump is going to contest the, if it's anywhere near close, Trump will contest the election.
Right.
And so then we'll get God knows how many months of people pretending that she didn't win. Or the media treating it as though this is like something we need to stroke our chins about and wonder about and all this stuff. And that will be toxic, you know, but then they'll swear her in. And then we will get, I think we're going to get impeachment proceedings. For myself, you know, what I'm looking forward to, of course, will be the internet show trials after she wins. In which people like me are going to be arraigned as, you know, traitors to the faith and, you know, all of that.
Right.
I had a different prudential judgment than the people that backed Trump.
Right.
And so we'll get that. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's not going to be a fun year. We will be right back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Doug O'Brien talking about what's going on out there in the world of politics. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien. Yeah, talking about the fallout from this election. It's such a poisonous election, and they're both such terrible candidates.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, there's the old, the old practical joke, right? With the, like, if you're in a tug of war and, you got both teams and they're pulling as hard as they possibly can. And then on a secret signal, one team they just lets go. Yeah, just let go of the rope and everybody falls on each other, you know? And that's kind of my feeling about this election. You know, there's one very simple goal that I have as a Catholic concerned about the common good in this election. It's really, really simple. Don't elect Donald Trump. That's it, right? Just stop that guy. But the thing is at midnight on November 8th, the moment that this election is called and he loses, this is the moment where you either can like keep pulling on that rope, trying to stop Donald Trump, and then you wind up falling over because, okay, it's over. Or you stop, you wipe your hands and you say, okay, that mission accomplished. Now we have to stop Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the next goal. Afterwards is because, of course, that there's all kinds of evil things that she wants to do as well. Not everything that she wants to do is evil. If it comes to that, even not everything Donald Trump wants to do is evil. Just so much of it that, getting the trains to run on time is really not a good trade-off. And so that's it, But in the meantime, what concerns me and has concerned me all along has been, as my tribe of conservatives goes to the mat trying to figure out a way to rationalize the insane choice to nominate Donald Trump for president, what they have inevitably wound up doing is being forced to defend everything that he says and does, right, as not that crazy and evil. Really, if you hold your jaw the right way and turn your head and squint with one eye, it makes sense, actually, when he makes fun of a Gold Star family. There's actually a good reason to mock disabled people, if you think about it, mentally. And on and on. And you get these bizarre defenses going on, to the degree where yesterday somebody was seriously, in all seriousness, was telling me, actually, grabbing a woman's genitals is not sexual harassment, really, technically. And it's like, what's wrong? Have you lost your mind? What's wrong with you?
Right.
And that's, that's the, what I look at is all of that is not going to go away on November 9th. That whole ball that got rolling, trying to rationalize the indefensible, all those people are going to still be there, all still saying, actually, we were right, and et cetera, et cetera. And you got to, and I don't know what to do about that. I keep hoping, vainly, I think, that when they lose on November 8th, they're going to say, what did we do wrong? How can we examine ourselves and make sure that this mistake is never made again? But I think that most of the energy will go towards saying we were cheated by a vast conspiracy, evil, evil forces stopped our just cause and all of that. You just think,
right.
I listened to a speech yesterday, a really, really good speech, given at it was the 2016 Erasmus lecture, given at, I think, like the headquarters of First Things, which is the kind of conservative evangelical Catholic ecumenical journal of religion and public life. And Russell Moore gave, he's a Southern Baptist, a very erudite evangelical, gave this lecture basically saying, can the religious right be saved? And the conclusion of his lecture is really quite devastating because he says the religious right has become the people that the religious right warned us about.
Right. Correct.
20 years ago. And the most devastating part of his analysis, I think, was when he said, we no longer compare our thinking to the gospel and our actions to the gospel. We don't compare our actions to Christ. We compare our actions to our culture war enemies. And as long as we're doing just the same thing they are, or doing it a little bit more cunningly so that we beat them, that's fine.
Well, you know, the same thing happened at Liberty University, right? Where Jerry Falwell Jr. has endorsed Trump, and yet a large number of students, I think more than 1,000, signed a letter that was printed in the school paper saying that they cannot support Donald Trump. And it showed, again, exposed kind of these cracks.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to be careful about throwing rocks to the evangelicals because, you know, not having been one, I can't say I fully understand their mindset, but I have seen the same thing within Catholicism. And, you know, you and I have spoken off air in the past about how we both have friends and who, because of their position on the issue of life, have opted to support Donald Trump and have taken. And because of that, and you can sense even how they write that they are uncomfortable with that, right? But they have further dug in this position in an effort to justify, right, their position. And it's, and you know, and like, again, what I say is that on November, you know, 12th or 13th, when we go to Mass, there will have been no healing because if, as you suspect, and I think you're probably right, he contests the election in one or more states, that will go on at least. You know, and I just see this happening, this being a problem.
It has the potential to go. Well, you know, look how long you dragged out the birther thing. Yeah. I mean, that stuff is as crazy as Ted Cruz's dad helped kill JFK. There's nothing there, you know. Right. But as long as you have a strong man making that case, all the other people will just flock to him and say, Donald Trump is saying this. It's being repeated in the media because Donald Trump is saying it, and he has a lot of money and can and commands microphones because of that. Then it, you know, it becomes, it remains a thing. Right. And so for 5 years we listened to this ridiculous, manifestly, transparently racist lie. You know, that. A guy who was obviously born in Hawaii was that he was actually a Kenyan. And we have to think about this long and hard. It was like the 9/11, you know, conspiracies.
Well, you got Sean Hannity offering to send Barack Obama.
Sure.
You know, and pay the ticket. And you know, that kind of rhetoric.
No kidding. Yeah, the go back to Africa thing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You know,
but in fairness, and now you don't want to say this, but, you know, EWTN had Donald Trump on this week.
Tonight, actually. They're going to air it tonight.
Oh, there's airing tonight. Okay. But the thing is this, is that at some point, we Catholics have to really, we have to own our responsibility with this too, right? And so no one knows that I'm just picking on, you know, conservative Catholics that support Donald Trump because they think he's pro-life, is that, you know, pox on both houses. Hillary Clinton is only slightly better, and in fact, in some ways, much, much worse. And so, you know, a pox on both houses. But the bigger question, I think, for we as Catholics is how do we heal the divisions
right.
you know, in our parishes and in the in the broader church and with the culture afterwards, because it's ugly, and I'm just afraid it's not going to get better.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the things that exemplified Lincoln fought a really brutal war, and I'm not one of these people that writes hagiographies of Lincoln. I think Lincoln was our greatest president. What a job holding the United States together. But at the same time, it has to be recognized that Lincoln authorized war crimes. He authorized war crimes. That's what Sherman's March to the Sea was. And so it was a brutal war against civilians. And that has to be faced. But at the same time, I think that his second inaugural really exemplified the best of us. You know, when he says, with malice toward none, with charity for all, let us work together to bind up the nation's wounds. I think he wanted to offer generous terms to the South. And had he not been shot, I think that would have happened. And I think that what we did, for example, with the Marshall Plan also shows something really good. And so I think generosity has to be first and foremost when this particular little conflict is over. You know, the people have been doing their best, and I think that has to be acknowledged. You're listening to You're Connected to the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Doug O'Brien, and we will be back.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien, talking about the woes of the world. And just the exasperation of that everybody feels about our politics and all the rest of it. You know, one of the things that Pope John Paul said that was so prescient, I think, and I think we're seeing this lived out now, is he said that politics and economics are not at the root of the human condition. They're expressions of culture.
And more than that, they're subservient to the dignity of the human person.
Exactly. Right? And so what... You know, what really, where things really start to change is at the level of culture. And of course, culture reflects cult. Whatever your most deeply held beliefs are will be expressed in the culture. And then the culture is going to drive what the laws say and how money is spent. You spend your money on things that matter to you. Somebody once pointed out that you could tell, you know, what mattered most to a civilization by its great public works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at Egypt and you can see that what mattered most to Egyptians was the eternal fortunes of their kings. And that's why you get giant tombs, you know. And when you get to, you know, Rome, you see great public works, and they're directed toward what? Well, they're directed toward the glory of the state. And also toward, you know, things like the sports in the arena and the games in the arena and that kind of thing. And when you get to Europe, you get the great cathedrals were the central works of high medieval Europe. And when you get to America, what are our biggest buildings? Well,
commerce.
Buildings devoted to money, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And buildings devoted to sports, you know, and things like that. Or movie theaters are immense complexes. But yeah, you're right. And so what's the center of our, what's our cultus around? Well, it's around, you know, power, money, power, pleasure, and honor, which used to be known as the golden calf. And
or the cardinal, you know, sins.
Right, the cardinal sins. And that's what we're centered on. And so what we're seeing, of course, is who do we have representing us? Well, people who are in the service of money, power, pleasure, and honor. And so, we're, you know, which one of these people who are devoted to the golden calf do we want to rule over us? That's what we're getting, you know.
Well, I do kind of think the body politic, though, is kind of like the old story of the frog who gets cooked by the pot being heated up on him slowly, right? Is that, you know, having been on the Hill and worked on campaigns, I will say that on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, I have encountered and known and have counted as friends, people who held elected office who are decent people, who want to do the right thing, who are motivated by their sense of faith and the common good, and that's really what drives them. But you know, in the last decade or so, though, is that there has been this kind of increasing temperature moving away from that, and it's how we find ourselves now, is that kind of the ugliness and the vices of our culture are now being played out for the whole world to see in our electoral politics. And, you know, and again, it's in my view, it's easy to bash Trump because he has given us such a rich of things to bash. But, you know, it's not like Hillary is better in comparison. She's just, you know, a degree slightly less worse. And there really isn't a third party option. I have come to embrace the notion of the American Solidarity Party, but even in my home state of Illinois, they are only an eligible write-in in a handful of counties. And so, you know, that's going to be a longer term process. And so, again, it gets back to, like you were saying earlier, you know, it's not just about Lincoln healing. It's also kind of it reminds me of, you know, back when I was in school, of St. Augustine in the City of God, right? And this idea that the church really is a separate and superior city to the city of man. And that's really should be our focus. Right. And it needs to be separate from, though in it at the same time. And that's, I think, the challenge for those of us trying to pick up the pieces in our homes and in our families, in our communities, and in our parishes when this election is finished. Is it, how do we begin this healing process? Because unfortunately, it will not come from our elected leaders.
And that's exactly right. It does have to come from us. And that's what it comes back to for me, you know. When Jesus looks at the salvation of the world, he's not looking at Caesar at all. He talks to, who's he talking to? He's talking to the fishermen and, you know, these peasants out at, you know, sitting around the Sea of Galilee. It's like, you know, I mean, it's today he'd be in Snohomish, Washington. You know,
yeah, right.
So, you know,
right.
And he's looking at those people, those nobodies in the Greco-Roman world, and saying, "You are the light of the world. You are a city on a hill. You're the salt of the earth. Where is salvation going to come from? Who's it going to come through? It's going to come through these nobodies." And that's us, you know, and so the idea that somehow or other, whoever wins this election, that's finally salvation will arrive, or it will be the end of days. Neither of those things is true.
Right.
You know, and I'm quite ready. You know, I have been out there saying, because I think that it's just obviously true. It's just a function of arithmetic at this point. That it's obvious that Trump is going to lose this. But if I turn out to be wrong, you know what? everybody can have a good laugh. Ha ha, you were wrong. You know, I sure was. I'm not going to say it's the end of days because Trump lost. I think it's going to be very bad. I think that he's going to do very bad things if he wins. And it might be extremely dangerous to our constitutional order. And all kinds of terrible things can happen, you know, including issues with military chain of command, use of nuclear weapons, you name it. All kinds of bad things could happen because this guy is an unstable kook. But it's not the end of days. That doesn't happen until Christ says it happens, you know. And so we soldier on, you know, and we continue to trust in God because God, whatever happens, is in charge of things. And that's part of it, is that we tend to speak in such apocalyptic terms about our presidential politics because we are an immensely powerful country. And certainly we bear an enormous responsibility in this election, but we're not God.
No, and so
we don't have to despair, you know.
And in both cases, the vice presidential candidates, again, not being overly thrilled by the by that ideological gymnastics they have both gone through.
Yeah, no kidding.
To kind of conform to the head of the ticket, is that there are you know, grown-ups, it seems to me, of goodwill, that will be vice president. And I think Tim Kaine, while I am obviously deeply disappointed by his departure from what has been really a lifelong commitment to being pro-life, to his sudden, you know, pro-choice position or more overtly pro-choice position, I still believe or hold out hope that he would be a voice of reason in the Clinton administration.
Yeah, my friend Rod Bennett has this sort of secret hope that you know, whoever wins, there will be immediate impeachment proceedings. He's hoping, you know, that there would be impeachment proceedings, since it's more likely to happen with Clinton. That she gets impeached and then just Kaine serves out, you know, who has adult qualities as well. You know, although I got to say, I mean, certainly in the debates, you know, Hillary was the only adult on that stage. And that came through. Unfortunately, adults can be deeply corrupt.
Yeah.
But at least she was a grown up, you know. And, you know, that was the thing. But, yeah, it's the reality is whoever gets elected, you know, the world will continue and God will still be in charge. And that's part of what I just find amazing, hearing Catholics talking as though, you know, the history of the church is, it's behind us now and we have nothing to look forward to. There's no hope, and it's like, but hope is a theological virtue. It doesn't go away.
Right.
As long as the gospel exists and as long as the baptized are there, there is the theological virtue of hope. And so don't talk this way. Stop drinking at the teat of despair. You know, it's going to be okay. Life will get better. And, you know, if it's not like we're looking forward to being roasted on griddles like St. Lawrence.
Right.
So anyway, I want to thank you, Doug O'Brien, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Mark.
A pleasure. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. Our producer today was Danny Head. And I will be back tomorrow with Reverend Mr. Deacon Stephen Gradonis. Until then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.